Hi everyone, John Hodge here with Old Dog Meats in conjunction with the Hotel Anfield. Already we've gone through a year and a half. This is the 16th episode, please.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, so Paul Machin's here for the first time, having his debut from the Redmen TV. Peter Shriver's man and one of my busy mates of the past, Craig Johnson. Kruggy!
All right, so
great to have you, mate. It's absolutely great to have you here, along with some of the other greats that we've had over the last year or so. What's happening, mate? Are you back in Liverpool? And I take it you look forward to it because you haven't been here for a while. What's happening with yourself? Tell us about what's happening with yourself.
Well, main thing is we came for the derby, the last ever derby at Goodison Park,
yes.
And it got rained off. So all the way from Sydney to watch the game, because I like Goodison Park, I've got to say, yes. That I always did. Always managed to score there at some stage against Everton, even when I was playing for Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
before I got to Liverpool, and funnily enough, I just always had a good feeling for Everton, right, and a good feeling for Liverpool, the city, and Liverpool the club.
You do get certain grounds which attracts you and makes you feel a bit comfortable. If that's, yeah. I think we've talked about that in the past, but does it, you go in there, yeah. And It makes you, I don't know, it does something to you.
Especially the ones that you've scored at a few times. Absolutely. Like Old Trafford.
The Camp Nou scored six, Craig, so that was all right.
There you go. I rest my case.
No, that's, you know, I'll never forget that part. But no, look, you look at what you won during your time at Liverpool, mate. How many European Cups?
One, lost one. Played in the Heysel disaster,
right.
Which was a big thing.
FA Cups?
1-1, lost one.
League?
1-5.
Oh!
Came second twice.
Charity Shields, about six?
Something like that. Three, I think.
I might have missed one.
Milk Cups. Yeah, League Cups, whatever they were called at the time.
Yeah,
it was a glorious period with a glorious bunch of blokes in a glorious city. And actually, I'll say a glorious time because it was pre... social media, and pre a lot of the nonsense that the players and the club and personalities have to deal with now. There was none of that. It was just
God laughed at me.
It was much more honest and clear and crisp and clean and naive. You know, it was naive. There was something soulful about you were making it up as you were going along. Here's another word for you, right? Really interesting. There was very little professionalism. No. That's a fairly new term.
For 90 minutes there was.
No, that's a different thing.
Okay.
That was called putting in a shift.
Yeah, there wasn't an official name.
Hello,
for it.
That's my point. Putting in a shift and working your nuts off, right, for your mates and for the town for 90 minutes. That was a given. So all that good stuff, that hard work and that heart and soul and that was all there, but there was none of this marketing bullshit around it. That's what I'm getting to.
Fair enough. And plus, scousers love that, don't they? Like the hard graft and the authenticity, because I always felt as a German, having settled here, scousers smell bullshit a mile off, really.
Yeah,
and they love hard work and authenticity.
Just not from you, though, Craig, obviously, the way you kind of come up into the game is so interesting. It's so different. I mean, obviously, particularly because you come from another country, first and foremost. But how much of that hard work, you know, is just central to who you were? Did you feel an extra, you know, like sort of need to go that extra mile because you'd had so many sort of setbacks in the early days?
Absolutely. And I'm still feeling it. I'm 64 years old and nothing's changed. Life is about hard work every single day.
Yeah.
Right? We're teaching our kids otherwise, these now players otherwise. Everything's hard work, you know, and the older you get, the harder it is. But I also come from a very working class town called Newcastle in Australia, north of Sydney. All the whiz kids and the fancy dads and the show ponies, they're all in Sydney and Melbourne. But working class, thanks for laughing.
they just don't have a sense of humor, Craig.
Well, the Germans aren't known for it. You know,
you can rely on a German
cars.
To identify a joke.
That's it. Jawohl. anyway, what I was getting to is I think the world's gone off kilter in a way that marketing and sales and BS has overtaken heart and soul and character. And that's the joy of being in Liverpool in that era. And they say the era before us, Carnaby Street and the Rolling Stones and the Beatles and that in the mid-60s, they say that was even better than our era.
Yeah.
But we had something honest and pure.
Mm-hmm.
And hard work was actually at the core of it. And it was professional in its own way that we delivered time and time again, right, with the hard work and the results. And, yeah. and a lot of that's gone out. It's lost in this marketing BS, you know. Yeah. And don't forget, you know, I was one of the original, what do you call them, foreigners.
Yeah, you so was
I,
actually.
I won't be offended if someone.
There wasn't many before you, was there?
I know.
Have you called just before you? Have you?
No. He came a little bit after I was here because I was at Middlesbrough for Liverpool.
That's right.
So that, 75, yeah. I was here, 15-year-old, and I was a legal immigrant at the time.
I was.
They sent me home. I was only 15. I was on my own from Australia, right? And my parents could only afford a one-way trip. And my whole story is I had a trial with Middlesbrough, and the famous Jack Charlton saw the trial at Middlesbrough. He was the manager there. We're getting beat 3-0 at half time, and he stormed into the dressing room and he had a go at everybody. He said, "You're rubbish, you're hopeless, useless." He got to me, he said, "And you?" He said, "Where are you from?" I said, "I'm from Newcastle, Northern New South Wales, Australia." He said, "You are the worst footballer I've seen in my effing life," he said.
That's Jack.
That's so motivation.
He said, "So I want you to F off." You know, I'll say hop it. He didn't say hop it.
You can swear on this podcast. Right. It's fine.
Get back to, hop it back to where you come from. So I said, "What now?" It was half time. It was a half time team talk. "What now?" He said, now. Pack my little bag up. By the way, much like now, this time of the year, the day before I'd been on the beach, and Nobby's Beach it's called, with all the girls and all the bikinis and all my mates. Yeah. As a 15-year-old.
It was 5 degrees C at the time.
So next thing I know, 24, I'm jet lagged. I don't know where I'm coming or going. I'm 15, black and white television. No iPhones, no internet, no nothing, right? And my parents have sold their house to finance my and Jack's delivered this little bit of good news at halftime. I'm like, what the? So everybody's like, "Oh my goodness," you know, the rest of the players, you know, because at least they weren't getting there. So packed my bag out, right? And I went outside and it was snowing, right? And because it was halftime, I'd been playing, and you were a trialist.
Yeah.
Right, trialists were the most fiercest people you would ever come against in football because they were looking for a job. There was
point to prove.
500 kids there from Wales, Glasgow, London, you name it, all looking for two or three spots. All 16, 17, a little bit older, a few my age, 15. But it was cutthroat, so I had blood all over my knees because they were.
Yeah, not a shower, nothing.
Not a shower. Right, I had rasta kind of hair because I was a surfy dude, and I closed the door behind me, and it was snowing. I had blood on my knees. Right, parents have sold the house. I got my little soccer boots in my bag. Right, and the famous coach has said, "Worst player ever." Now what do I do? And that's my story. That's my story. Now what do I do?
Is it true that you just started like training in the car park? After that, you just refused to actually give up and decided to train even more.
It was kind of more subversive than that because he'd told me to F off, but I'd managed to negotiate behind his back at where the trialist stayed. And I said to the woman, her name was Nina Postgate, said, "Nina, if I clean the boots, if I clean the toilets and the bath, right, at the club, and if I do this during the day, then I can have 2 or 3 hours in the car park when the lads are training at Hutton Road," it was called, where Middlesbrough trained. "When they're there, I can train in the car park." So I had 2 or 3 hours a day. The rest of the time was cleaning boots and cars, and because they all gave me a little bit of money. And there was a chap there that really helped me out. There was a few. One of them was the left fullback for England in the 1996 World Cup final, Terry Cooper. Who was a lovely man.
Leeds manager.
He would give me some money. There was another guy called Stuart Bowman who was captain. Then the key in all the mix here, there was a wonderful player there who was captain at the time. His name was Graham Souness.
Yeah. Okay.
So Graham was the captain, and he heard the story about the Charlton tongue lashing, right? And Graham's been around the world, and he stop laughing. Graham's been around the world, and he likes Australia. So he came up to me. He said, "Well, look, mate, I'll look after you. Clean the boots, clean the cars. We'll give you a few bob, enough money you can save up. You can get back to Australia." So Graham was the one that kind of took the lead and looked after me. Mm. He eventually got me out of the players' digs and into his own private digs, right, with a lady called Phoebe Haig, which was a few years later. So I might not be alive if it wasn't for some of those older footballers just saying, yeah, we've got to look after this kid.
We skipped a little bit of your story now because you were actually born in South Africa. And yeah, as much as you told me earlier, you were Australian. So how did that come about?
And it's part of the story. And that is my dad and my mum, they're both Australian. They live in Australia, our family, generations of Australia. Dad wanted to be a soccer player. And he went when he was 21, 22 over to Scotland to try and make it, and he failed. Mm. He failed miserably. So basically, he met Mum, who was going to England to be a school teacher on the boat over. So they landed in London, and then here's part of the story. Dad went up to Scotland to play. He failed, right? He came down to London, met with Mum. They got married, right? And he got Mum pregnant. They must have had some beers and, you get pregnant. Older.
And there's different options available to become pregnant. But
let's do this. So Dad loved Fulham. So anyway, he took Mum to Fulham, and Mum was pregnant with me. And they stood on the terraces, and then Dad rubbed Mum on the belly.
Yeah.
Said, "My boy's going to come back here and play one day." So he said, on the terraces of Fulham.
Wow.
So anyway.
One day my lad's going to come here and get slaughtered by Jack Charlton. Incredible, isn't he, though?
So then, right, they had my sister in London, and on the boat, they'd already had my older sister, on the boat on the way home to Australia from London, they stopped at South Africa. And then for 6 years, and Dad played soccer in South Africa. Mum taught.
That's a long delay.
In Johannesburg,
yeah,
was it?
In Joburg, yeah. Yeah. So that's where I was born, in Johannesburg. Oh, nice. And then at 6 years old, went back home. And that's when I started playing soccer in Australia, when I was six. But my parents, I'm Australian.
Mm, yeah.
Just happened to stop at South Africa and have some sex on the way home.
I think that already, after like 10 minutes into the podcast, you already win the most exciting CV of all the guests that we've had so far.
The Jack Charlton story, I can comprehend that, because I played for Jack for 10 years. He took no fucking shit, by the way. He was ruthless when he had to be, but I loved him.
Yeah.
You know, I loved him, but I can just imagine. Shit. Honestly, it makes me laugh because that's the way he was.
And the funny thing is, he wasn't wrong. No, that's the point. That's the point, compared to the other trialists who were English kids.
To be fair to you, I'm not being funny. I know what it was when I signed for Newport County. I left work as a shoemaker on a Friday, and I went down to South Wales and played for Newport Reserves against, not a great team down there. And I thought I had the boots on the wrong fucking feet. I was that bad. I'm thinking, what the fuck? Because it was a shock leaving home for the first time. I'm going to, so I can see where that's only a couple of hundred miles, not where you had to go. So that must have been so different. You jet lagged, you're away from home, but you've actually gone on the pitch. All right, you played shite and all that, but that's not your fault.
It's just, but at 15 as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I just have to pick that up, and it goes totally off a tangent. But at 15,
what they say in Spain, Pete, is cojones grandes. Big balls.
Oh, no, I translated that without speaking Spanish.
I didn't think
Spanish
you could speak Spanish. You know, you went to German school. But
I didn't
anyway,
think you spoke Spanish.
Oh, sí. Amigo, ¿cómo estás?
But no, on a serious note, at 15, at that time, Craig, you wouldn't have, obviously, as you said earlier about the technology available at the time. So it wasn't a case of, oh, mom or dad, I texting them on WhatsApp saying, I feel a bit lonely. You are stuck in Middlesbrough, having come off like a really nice part of the world.
Yeah.
Get feedback delivered like that.
Yeah.
Like you are absolutely within your right to just crumble and basically try and find a way home. But instead, the perseverance you showed, and I like the point about consistency you made earlier, which is something I try to say that to people left, right and center. It's not about bringing your A game one day a week. It's about doing it every day. And it's so hard because somebody achieves something today and think tomorrow, you know what? Take the foot off the gas, done my bit now for a week. And that's not good enough. You need to do it, not just footballers. I'm talking in life,
that's
at work, every day. It doesn't matter if you are a nurse like my mother was or whatever. And you seem
to... It's a story I know because I've had to tell it quite a lot, especially in Australia to kids. And I'm sick of telling the story. Mm. But it's not about sport. It's about life, as you're pointing out. It's about attitude. It's about... Again, being against the odds. And as I keep saying, and you know Jack and I know Jack, he was 100% right, because compared to all the other players, the Irish kids, the Welsh kids, the Londoners, they were beautifully cultured footballers at that age, because they'd done all that practice. And I hadn't, because I was a surfy kid, I was a skateboard kid, I loved soccer. But it was a fact and it was reality. So I was then in the survival mode, because I couldn't stay. I had to hide from Charlton and I couldn't go back because I had no money whatsoever. 15, black and white television, as I said. So it's the kindness of other people that sort of got me through it, including Souness. He knows the story inside out.
Yeah,
and when I do have to get in front of kids now, it's I survived because I was actually a good kid with a good attitude.
Mm.
And rather than be a victim, which you kind of pointed out, I just loved, what got me through is I loved how these other kids were playing, and at their age, 14, 15, how beautiful they were. And I was in love with that soccer ball. And you know, I held it up one night because the lady at the dig said, look, Charlton will kill me if he knows that you're around. There's an old coal shed out the back, right, but it had a heater on. What's it called? One of those? What's it called? Radiator.
Yeah.
Had a radiator in there and they'd furbished it a little bit, but it was an old coal shed. So she said, you can go in there, but don't tell anybody you're in there. So I was in there and all I had was a soccer ball. And I lifted it up and I thought, well, you know, it was like the map of the world. And I was looking up here at freezing cold England and how yesterday I was down there in beautiful hot Australia with all the guys and girls on the beaches. And now how the hell did I get here and how the hell am I going to get home? It was a survival. And I was starving, right? And Nina would put a little bit of food under the door now and then. And it was beans on toast. It was actually nice. And again, maybe I'm making it out to be more dramatic than it was, but she would literally leave the beans.
Like in a prison cell.
Yeah. Cheese on toast it was with beans on top. Anyway, the point being is the football is like a map of the world. It's a perfect object. Football doesn't make mistakes. The person using it makes the mistakes. And the more you use it, the less mistakes you make.
Apart from the Jabalani. The Jabalani football
huge,
in 2000 in World Cup.
Huge big story about the Jabalani.
We'll do that another day.
Do you know what? You're 100% right. I'll tell you that story.
No, we'll
do
that.
Why that messed 100%. Up? Why Adidas messed up so big with the Jabalani? There's a reason for that, scientific reason. Do you know
are
what
we
actually?
Just jump into it now, Craig. Go on.
No.
This is exciting.
Well, you've got to tell people who's looking at what's the Jabalani.
So the South Africa World Cup, it's the official World Cup football of the South Africa World Cup in 2010.
Yeah. So they created this new ball to try and save costs, which was a pop-out ball, meaning it didn't have any stitching on it and it was popped out so they could save money. So long story short, if you know football, you know how to swerve a ball because there's a science on how a ball swerves. And actually, a football is called a complex tricosahedron because that is the scientific name for the hexagons and the pentagons. and the number of them that make up a perfect soccer ball. And by the way, a soccer ball's not round. It's only round when the pig's bladder blows up and pushes out that tricosahedron. So what they did is they took all that stitching out, but that stitching is what makes a soccer ball different from a beach ball. Have you ever kicked a beach ball, which you just blow up? So the soccer players, the best in the world, were saying this football is behaving like a beach ball. It's because it was a beach ball. And I was saying, you've taken the whole craft and art out of football because the stitches, what the high and low pressure, why a ball swerves in the air is because as it's going forward, a football never accelerates. It's always decelerating from the moment it hits your foot, right? But if you create a spin, then one side is high pressure, wind, and one side's low pressure because the ball's spinning. That's why it goes like that or it goes like that, you see. So they took that away because it's the stitches that create that luft, like an aeroplane wing. Aeroplane wing is like that. So the air pushes it up.
Yeah.
And that's how Beckham swerves a ball. How many rotations in what space? So they took the stitches out of the Jabalani to try and save money, right? And they completely wrecked football, and that's why they had to change the ball halfway through.
It was a thing at the time because everyone was kicking off on this. Robert Green made a huge howl.
I kicked off about the Vuvuzelas.
Well, the Vuvuzelas were the most irritating part of that tournament. Yeah.
But anything else, but sorry.
But you officially like complained.
School, that. No one in school getting a lesson. Yeah. That's brilliant, that, mate. You know, I used to hate school, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, we know you did.
I wrote a letter because I was one of the main people behind the Questra ball. Because I was at Adidas for a long time in Germany, and I was one of the ones that created the Questra ball for the 94 World Cup in England. So again, I'd built a lab in Herzog and Aurach
in the US,
in Germany. No, in Germany.
Sorry, the World Cup.
Yeah, I bought built a lab, and built an electronic leg to kick the ball, so you could take away the human element as part of the science. So that's where I knew and sort of uncovered the science of a soccer ball going through the air. Because it is, it's a science.
I feel like going in the teacher sort of pupil sort of thing that this is developing. I put my finger up. So hold on, at 15, which means you prematurely aborted your education, clearly, because at 15 you're supposed to be in school.
Yes.
You are effectively, dare I say, technically homeless around Middlesbrough, at least for a little stint.
Penniless, homeless, penniless. Skillless. You name it. I was a good kid.
But you had a good kid with a good brain.
Yes, bingo.
Good brain. Hello. And you had something in you that kept you going.
Hold on.
Yeah. Fast forward.
Top attitude, yeah.
So then we go into the football in a minute, no doubt, and how you got your second chance in minutes, but all of that. But you ended up working for Adidas, working on something that's evidently quite technical. I mean, you lost John after two sentences. I could see just glazing, how?
Yeah.
Mind is blown.
When I explained to you about the football being a perfect object and doesn't make mistakes, ultimately, what the young Welsh kids and the Geordies and the Cockneys were doing, right, I figured out quickly, Graeme Souness, what part of ball, foot, on what part of ball to what effect? So if you look at topspin, then you put like that. If you look at chipping a ball, it's the top of your foot. So it's like a table tennis bat. So there's a science behind all of that, and players know it instinctively. Beckham versus Greece in the World Cup, right? He probably couldn't tell you the math.
No,
thanks for laughing. He couldn't tell you the math,
but
he could do it because it's in his brain because he actually must have knew where the wind was. But the Predators, right, they added so much more of the stuff I was looking for. Listen to this.
It's the grip, isn't it?
In the middle. What's
the grip?
The grip. Grip and the power and an increased sweet spot, right, which you increase the margin for error where you hit that ball, right, which is shaped to always be going away from you. Mm. Think about it. That's why we love it, because a footballer has a story. All the best women and men in the world, they have a story, them and the ball. Some people like Lionel Messi, they have this beautiful story. Some people like you and me, it's not so good. Anyway, what I was getting to, right, the whole predator stuff and the science from it, I'd figured that out in the Middlesbrough car park because I was really good at school. I was a really good student. My mum's a teacher, always has been, a long family teacher. I loved science and maths. So I looked to the science of maths and I created something in Middlesbrough car park called a mistake to tempt ratio. So if you've only got a ball and you've only got your feet, right, there's only four skills: control, pass, dribble, shoot. They're the four fundamental skills. It's the reading, writing, arithmetic of soccer right there, and left foot and right foot. If you can get faster and more accurate at those four skills, you will be a better footballer on a daily basis, and you can guarantee it. So that's what I practiced on the Middlesbrough car park. I drew targets and benchmarks to beat around those four skills. And every day, right, I started off 5 hours a day, I would have to hit certain targets, left foot, right foot, I drew them. And if I didn't, I'd start again. Maybe I'd be 7 hours. And one night I missed the beans on toast. So I got home, 7 hours, because I wasn't concentrating, and I missed dinner. And I starved all night. I was like, I'm not going to do that again. So the next day I did it in 5 hours. That was my a mistake to attempt ratio with hitting a ball just
that was,
on
that
the
was
ball.
Your goal. You're well, ambition of the yeah, day to yeah. get yeah. there.
How many
do
times
that to get that?
Yeah. How many times do you do it? How many times do you miss? Yeah. And if you miss, you've got to start again.
Yeah.
So then I was creating data without even knowing what I was doing, because all I wanted was the beans and toast with the cheese on the ham. That's all I wanted. So anyway, I tell you, survival works. So I got better as a player on a daily basis because my speed and my accuracy, it's that simple. No coach will ever tell you this because they'll tell you where to stand and what to expect. It's all bullshit, right? A lot of it's bullshit, right? If you can be a better player on a daily basis or better anything, because you're faster and more accurate, that's the hallelujah moment. Anyway, listen to this. So the 15-year-old, Charlton says, you're the worst player ever, and he was right. 2.5 years later, I was 17 years, 4 months, couple of weeks, 4 days and 6 hours. But who's counting? Right? Liverpool bought me. Right? And I was the most expensive player in British football history.
650,
so,
was it?
So from 15, yeah, £650,000. From 15, I made my debut, sorry, at 17 and a half for Middlesbrough.
How did you get your second chance under?
I'm just gonna put it in the timeline, just so you know. So 2.5 years later, the youngest player ever to play for Middlesbrough. In a match. And then another 2.5 years after that, Liverpool bought me. So in 5 years from being the worst player ever, actually, factually, to being the most expensive player that Liverpool ever got bought. So something remarkable happened in that Middlesbrough car park. And that's what I'm saying. It was all to do with the science and the maths and the love of the ball and the love of cheese on toast with baked beans on top and not missing
it. I get
out.
All that.
The fear of missing
fascinating,
out.
Fascinating, but it's great. That's brilliant.
That's it.
And
that's
who
fact.
Gave you that second chance? How did that? Just let's focus on that.
Well, Jack Charlton went to another club, Sheffield Wednesday, and a new manager came in, a little guy from Wales called John Neal.
Nice fella, John,
He was a lovely man, lovely man. I remember the morning he drove in, I must have been, I don't know, 16 and a half, maybe 17. And he came into the car park, and I wasn't expecting someone I didn't know parking their car. So like that, he said, who are you? And I said, I don't know, who are you? He said, oh, well, my name's John Neal. I'm the new manager. I said, I'm not supposed to be here. So he's gone in the dressing room and said, who's the bloke? They said, oh, that's the kangaroo in the car park, right, to some of the lads. And they said, well, is he any good? And they said, no, he's shit. So that was my introduction to the new manager.
He's a lovely man, by the way.
So naturally, he gave you a chance. Yeah.
He gave me a chance. Nice. Only because there was a lot of illness at the club one season. And there was a whole virus went through. So they couldn't field a whole youth. So someone said, what about the kangaroo in the car park? And they said, well, he's crap. You know, and they said, well, let's take him along just in case. So anyway, someone got injured and then I got on the field because somebody got injured. And I played well because I'd spent all this time in the car park.
But it's ridiculous when you think about like that being possible. Like imagine someone stood outside Anfield today and they're just a kid and they're kicking about and then like, you know, Arne Slot goes, we're a bit short. You know what I mean? Liverpool have had that over the recent seasons, a centre-back shortage. Oh, there's this kid just dribbling around some bins in the car park. Can he play? Yeah, you know, it's incredible that was even possible. But it's like that two-year period from 15 to 17,
yeah.
All of a sudden you're playing football and you're in. I mean, you made your debut against Everton as well.
But what's the currency of the game? I am missing a little bit of the story because I was trying to get on quickly. But apart from doing that stuff, at Ayrton Park Road, there was a bunch of scruffy street kids, right, Middlesbrough kids, that would play soccer every day. So I would play with them because I wasn't allowed to go to training. I would join in. So I learned how to elbow people and, not get hurt or the street smart. I learned the game with them.
So were you still living in this barn at the time, whatever it was?
No, it wasn't a barn. It was
still
a,
in your shed.
It was an old cold
a jail.
And it kind of was a
solitary confinement.
But that's all.
How long was you actually living in that with the lady?
You know, in the with
before
with
you Nina, moved on to better things.
It was about a month. But okay. Then this was at proper digs, like a
yeah,
hostel.
No, yeah.
So
yeah,
she moved me out of the digs. When a room became available, as long as Jack Charlton, and there was a guy called Harold Shepherdson, famous guy.
Yeah.
Harold Shepherdson, he was in the mix. As long as Shep and Charlton didn't know, because I was doing jobs for everyone, so they kept it all quiet. So again, kept it quiet. And then I'd do my soccer homework. That's what it was. But then I'd get my street smarts off the street kids. So again, there's a famous time when I actually made my debut. For Middlesbrough against Everton, I played really well. Right, the headline in the newspaper: Jack Charlton. I always knew the kangaroo. I always knew the kangaroo would make it.
That's Jack Charlton for you, Jack. You know what? You know.
Anyway, so part of the picture was we beat Everton. It was FA Cup actually, and then I was kind of mobbed afterwards after I scored and came off at the end. But it wasn't my Middlesbrough teammates that mobbed me. You know who it was? The scruffy street kids from Middlesbrough, Ayrton Park Road.
No,
they were all over me. They were there.
So that's a great, great note to end the first part of the Old Home Meets podcast with Craig Johnson, Paul Machin and Peter Shriver's mum. Be back in a sec. Hello, welcome to part two of the Aldo Meets podcast with Craig Johnson, Paul Machin, myself, and Peter Shriversman. I'm good at that now, mate.
Yeah, not bad.
Craig, you joined Liverpool shortly after they won the European Cup yet again against Real Madrid. Dressing room full of, I know because the dressing room full of big personalities. When I went into the dressing room for the first time and you were there, like usual, my heroes. These lads, and I was shit scared. I really was, nothing scares me, but that fucking scared me, by the way. But you're going in with just as big a personalities, wasn't you?
Yeah. Well, I actually joined just before the European Cup final, but I was injured, so I went on the trip But when you talk about meeting your kind of heroes, it was none of the players, funnily enough. But I was at Le Meridien, just on the top of the Etoile there in Paris, before the game. And both Madrid supporters were there and Liverpool supporters were there, all milling around, you know, the pre-match sort of nerves and all of that. And then a little, tiny little bloke walked in with white hair, an overcoat on, and he just walked in and the foyer was all milling with people. Anyway, someone spotted him and it went quiet, right? And the whole place went quiet because somebody amazing had just entered the room. Anyway, it was Bill Shankly.
All right.
So shivers down your back. And he walked and everybody stopped what they were doing, drinking, you know, the kerfuffle of noise when people are drinking beer and stuff. And it's like almost like Moses, you know, when the sea parted. and the crowd just came back and he was muttering under his breath. And you know what he was saying? Mm. Typical Shank stuff. Aye, it's going to be a good match tonight. Mm. Nice and brisk. There's a bit of moisture in the air. It's going to be skipping through like this. So he just stopped. He started talking to everybody. And everybody was hanging on every single word. Mm. Right. And it was. And I thought, oh, my goodness, you know, this is just, I've never seen anything like this before. That was my introduction to the whole of the Liverpool culture. Yeah. And anyway, somebody put a beer in Shanks's hand and he just turned and left and then the noise started again, you know. It's quite remarkable. That was my memory from it.
Well,
and then Barney Rubble, of course, scoring the goal.
Yeah. It was a cross.
Across, there you go.
But obviously, that's your first introduction to a European Cup final as a Liverpool player. If not on the pitch, it comes around again 3 years later. Rome 84, you're in the team for this one. Is that? I mean, obviously you've got five league titles under your belt as well. But that is a moment. I mean, that for me is growing up. I mean, my dad used to put that on. He'd get an old VHS tape and he'd put it on and go, sit down and watch this, mainly for Brucey's spaghetti legs stuff, to be honest. But like, is that the pinnacle for you in terms of your football?
Well, the league's bread and butter, and I get that. Shanks always said that, and Bob and Joe, bread and butter. But for me, being a Liverpool fan all the years, I have been lucky to be from the mid-60s, European Cups, six of them. And I'm telling you, it's just, you're saying about goosebumps and all that, they've been the best nights because the leagues are over, and I know I get all that, but yeah, it's so special, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it is. And everything you said is 100% right. But what you were getting to this night, we were away against Roma in Rome at the Stadio Olimpico. Yeah. And there was a bit of tinge of history. It was like the gladiators.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, but we were in the lion's den, right? And for whatever bizarre reason, it was a calendar reason. It wasn't a bizarre, it was a calendar reason. We'd had like two, nearly 3 weeks of no games and no training. So we actually went to Israel on a bit of a Majorca kind of holiday.
I went to one of them, which is at one time. I know what it's like. Yeah.
So we were 3 or 4 to 1 against winning this night. And there's a couple of famous stories attached to this. I'm not going to tell you now because we're short on time. But one of them was the Chris Rea song. I don't know what it is, but I love it. And everybody relates to that. But
a lot of people don't know about that. I don't think I made a point of it. But just tell the lads when we were going out with the Roma team. You know, the lines then, and you know, they're walking out at the same time. So you tell a story. I think was it nearly started it?
No, it was actually...
Was he your mate, wasn't you, Chris Rea?
Yeah, Chris Rea was a friend of mine because I came from Middlesbrough. Yeah. But also Davy Hodgson as well was in the dressing room at the time. So basically, we were odds on to lose this game, this final, in the Lion's Den. And Ronnie Moran, the first time I've ever seen him with a bit of a sweat on his face, you know, what are we going to do? So anyway, I was the music guy on the bus and wherever, I'd put the music on. So we discovered Chris Rea and this one song, I don't know what it is, but I love it. So the Italians had been high altitude training up in the Alps, you know, to get their fitness peaks right, no alcohol, no nothing. We'd been Israel on the beer, right, fighting and drinking and carrying on like I'll say the word, English hooligans. right? Which the Italians were scared shitless of, right? Right. So now we're 3-1 to lose, and we've got to walk past this big, long, complete concrete tunnel from the back end of where the dressing room is to the pitch, and we had to go past their room.
It's about 50 yards.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. So anyway, I'm going to have to stand up to do this very quickly. So everybody's really super nervous, and we've looked at Ronnie Moran. He's shaking his head like it's the first time ever. So all of a sudden, steel studs on the concrete floor. Everything's concrete and small and pokey, right? So Davey Hodgson starts like this. So I stood next to him and I started like this and said, and then the Chris Rea thing. And I don't know what it is, but I love it. I don't know what it is, but I want it to stay. And then three or four blokes, including Graham Souness, got out. Sammy Lee, I don't know what it is, but I love it. I don't know. And we were talking about the crack and the fun we'd had as blokes in Israel trying to kill time for 2 weeks. You know, what do you do when you're full of testosterone and you've got the big game, you drink beer and you bond.
Yeah.
And that's what it was. So now we're marching past the Italian dressing room and they go, what the hell is this? You know, and we're singing the song, but the steel studs on the concrete amplified, right? And we all believe that's what changed the odds from 3-1 to again, and why we won it. And then,
psychology. Right,
you mentioned the Bruce Grobler wobbly legs. 100%. Who does that stuff if you haven't just been, you know, drinking for 2 weeks and carrying on like a pork chop, you know? So anyway, that's the story.
Brilliant.
I've tried to do it as briefly as possible.
No, but that would have a bearing. You know, when you're going out and you're full of, you know, you're adrenaline and everything, you go and you think, that just, it brings you together. Yeah. And it's you're making a statement to them, like, we're not scared. We're ready for you in many ways.
Wonderful. At the same time, you're so right. At the same time.
You're still shitting yourself.
Yes, you are. Of course you are. But you're an Italian. You're sitting there. You've done all the right thing for 2 weeks with the right food, no alcohol, you know. You know, pretend you're like your mates up in the Alps, the Swiss Alps. Right, then you've got these English hooligans shouting and screaming like this was a war cry. I mean, you've got the likes of Souness. Remember the Istanbul flag?
Yeah.
You've got that walking past your dressing room, screaming and shouting. You're on fire and you want war. You want war.
I love that it's like the Scouse Hacker. The singer, Chris Rea.
The Scouse Hacker.
Just one last question on that because Steve Nicol comes on for you and misses the first penalty. Would you have taken the first pen if you'd stayed on the pitch?
Yeah. Probably.
Did you ever stick a pen?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't.
But I think you would.
I'm
looking over the place available.
Yeah, it would have been interesting that. Let's move things forward, guys, because obviously you actually played together at Liverpool in one of the great Liverpool sides. Kick it off. You come into that team.
Well, you know, you're so fortunate the timing for me to come in, you know. And to be fair, what we were talking about before, they're getting into the dressing room and, you know, as soon as I come in, the lads are all taking the piss out of me. I'm a garst and scally, you know what I mean? You know, playing for Republic of Ireland and all that. And they tried to catch you out, they tried to get you and all that. But I wasn't bad at handling myself with the lads because you've got to make, like, especially Jockey, everyone was scared of Jockey because he was like a manager within the room, wasn't he? You know, and Jockey would give you loads of stick and all that and wind you up and see how you react. You know, it's all a big test. Mm-hmm. But it makes you bigger, better. You know, gives you nice arrogance when you get with these lads and you look around before the game and, you know, I'm looking at Kruggy's there and I'm looking at Jockey and you're looking at Bruce and you're looking at these great players and you're going, walk me, I've got a chance here, by the way. And then Barnsley come and Pizza come and Ray come, the squad we had was just scary.
I'd love to know what your reaction was to Aldo coming in.
Yeah. Once again, Aldo's so right, all of those stuff there. This dressing room was brutal. I mean, it was brutal. You're laughing.
It was every day in training, wasn't it?
If you made one little mistake with your English or your verbiage or your you know, if you said something that wasn't true, which Bruce did a lot, by the way. No, Bruce was the loveliest, it still is, the loveliest man in the history of the world. He's got this thing inside him where he really wants to be liked and good on him. I was his room partner for 9 glorious years. And, mate, just as a side note, if Bruce was dealing with Malaysian bookmakers or anything like that in the background making phone calls, I'd know about it. Never absolutely. Did any of that stuff happen. He got stitched up on that whole thing. Yeah. So anyway, we all love Bruce, and he was a fundamental part of the dressing room, because when you got these clever clogs, Scotsman, which now we look back, Jockey, Kenny, Graham, right, we're all piss-taking big time, right, as long as it was someone else.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine when you tried to take the piss out of it. It went down like a flat balloon. Right. So Aldo's right. It was brutal. So you had to watch every second. And they had their own little gang. It was kind of two gangs, the Southport gang and the rest of us.
It was actually, a little bit went on there,
And then it did. In fact, I created a name for the other gang because I was in there. Some reason I was always one that got dropped, and it was always funny to them that I was dropped, but it wasn't funny to me. This was my livelihood. This was Jack Charlton, you know, leaving home.
Reincarnated.
Mate. So I was spewing when I get dropped. I'd go over the top. But anyway, so the other group, so the Southport
Mafia.
Yeah, bingo, And I created on this side of the world. Right, I lived at West Derby, and then Heswell Way, Parkgate.
Walton was us, wasn't he?
That's right. There was a few of us. Bruce was over here. Sammy was over. Anyway, I called it the SGG. And what the SGG was the Sour Grapes Gang. Anyway, he's good, this bloke, isn't he? thanks for laughing. So, you know, clearly the match would be on a Saturday, and everybody would be playing against Man United, all the Southport gang. But then the SGG was sitting on the bench. We'd have to come in on a Sunday morning training, you know, in the freezing cold. They'd been to the match. They'd had dinner with their wives. They'd drunk beer, you know. It was fantastic. And we're like, we're spewing, and we're in on a Sunday morning. And then we'd have a few beers, and then we'd get sort of political. You know, we'd start to hammer them. And we became the victims in the dressing room. And so we all decided we can't be victims. Anyway, so there was always a lovely, lovely sort of...
love-hate.
Yeah, in the dressing room. But it always manifests itself in positivity and better results. Yeah. Right? And a perfect example of this, right?
It's the competition. The competition we have for places was...
Was fierce. So listen... If there's 3 or 4 or 5 of these really good players playing for us, but then there's 3 or 4 or 5 of us makeup players, right? And we're winning everything. Mm. But if those 3 or 4 go up and play for Scotland and they win nothing, just a little way of thinking about this, Aldo, right? So you go up there and you win very little games, right? Or championships or anything. But then you come back and you've got a group of players, the SGG, that you wrap around. It's like the SSS, what's it called? You know.
Don't mention the war. Greg. Don't mention the war.
Anyway, you see how undiplomatic I am at times. It doesn't matter because I don't live here, so I can shoot off on the next
break. We still have to drive into town together.
Oh, yeah, all right.
So that's going to be awkward,
Anyway,
I turn the music up.
I am officially on this what do you call it? Aldonomics, do you call it? On this podcast. What's it called?
It's called the Bollocks.
The Bollocks. Okay, I'm officially on the Bollocks saying there was more to this Liverpool story in the day than just the Southport gang. The SGG played a very powerful role in supporting the big Bollocks.
The Southport lads, like, you know, especially when Glenn Hussein came and all that, they used to have a few on a Thursday. Now, we used to go out. Obviously, we knew when to go out. We were very professional. We really were. But we were, honestly.
If there's
a game on a Saturday, you're out Saturday. Sunday, you go out. Monday, no. Tuesday, no. Game Wednesday, you might have a few after the game. That's it. Thursday, no. Friday, no. Play Saturday. But the Southport gang used to have a little few tipsies on a Thursday after training. Then we found out. Yeah, yeah. And I won't mention the names, but you know who you are.
They weren't I'm not sure they are watching those.
They weren't getting pissed. I mean, I'm having a few pints now and again, but you know, you just put petrol into the car, aren't you?
Yeah. So we have to mention it. Probably one of the most standout, famous Liverpool things. So, what unity players being together? The Anfield rap.
Yeah.
Transcended Time, one of the most famous club songs of all time.
You know what? We got to the semi final, and I always remember he's training. When before saying we went for a walk, and Craig's saying, I've got this song, it's in my head. Now we've got to get the final, and it's going to be the boss, it's going to be brilliant, and all that. And we're going, fuck off, Craig. And next minute, we beat Forest 2-1. At Hillsborough, and then next minute he's on the case and in training and all that, and he's coming out with all these things in training. It's going to be like this, and we're all listening, we're all intrigued, because you know, next minute he gets a place. I always remember, he can go on after this, Craig, but I always remember we went to Lark Lane. There's a studios in Lark Lane, so Craig said, come to the studio, a day off we had, or after training. So we get there, all the lads, like, you know what I mean, and a couple of beers, all in these shell suit track suits, and free stuff. We sorted loads of Adidas free stuff out for us. We had loads of
Hummel.
So we got all this, and a rapper came, famous rapper called, I think it was Derek B.
That was him.
Yeah, Derek B. So the next minute, we're all there and we're all doing our little bit. All right, it's all low sound. There's a pound. I'm good. And the next minute, we're going through. And Derek B went, lads, that's shite. He said, go. After an hour, he said, there's a pub down there, go and have a few beers and come back. So we went, So we all went to this pub just down the road, and we had a few beers. We went back and we knocked it off. You knocked off straight away, didn't we?
Yeah.
It was a great day, wasn't it, mate?
Yeah, it was.
But you can take it on from them, how it came about.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing. We've talked about it. There was this remarkable team spirit in the dressing room. And just, I'm an Australian. And as an observation from the back, you've got this dressing room and there's all these different accents. The most powerful one being the Scouse accent and the Scouse culture that we're all in, Scouse town. Mm. So I love the fact that you've got him and Steve McMahon walking down the road, and they're talking to each other, right? And the way they're talking is like only mates can. But then in the background, you've got a Danish bloke, you've got a Zimbabwean, you've got an Australian, you've got some Scotsmen. What gang did we call them again? The Southport gang, the Southport connection. So you got them.
The Southport Mafia.
The Southport Mafia, there you go. You got that, right? And I thought, this is why we're so successful, because we all get on. So the whole idea was Oldo and Steve McMahon walking down the street saying, all right, Oldo, sound as a pound. I'm custy la, but there's nothing down. Yeah. The rest of the lads ain't got it sussed. We'll have to learn them to talk like us. Walk on with hope in your heart. And that
Barnsley comes in.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's the whole thing. So as we go through it, but I reached out to, I loved Run DMC at the time. I love my music from day one. Run DMC at the time. So this was all in America. There was no rap in England at all. There was no rap. One guy had done something. His name was Derek B. So I reached out to him, said, look, I want to do a cup final song, but not a, you know, stupid one like they usually do, soppy kind of. Diamond Lights, remember that? Chrissy Waddle and... Shocker. Anyway, and don't forget, none of the lads can sing.
Wasn't the best.
Yeah, none of the lads can sing either. That's the point. Yeah. So it had to be a rap. So he said, yeah. So the whole thing, and the Scottish guys, they said, we're Highland lads,
Achai the new.
There's four of us and only two of you. Yes, so if you want any trouble and you don't want a slap, you'd better teach us the Anfield rap. So it goes on and on like that. And everybody plays their little part. And
We actually got to number three. I think it was three, wasn't it? In the parade, you know.
All right, Ace, we're great hearing you. But the other lads don't talk like we do. We'll have to learn them to talk proper. Walk on.
I think on that note, we'll have to end part two. Absolutely brilliant. Craig, that's class, mate. That's class. Brilliant. Right, that's final part of Aldo Meets podcast with my three mates here. I won't tell you that because I've told you that before.
He's bored of saying Peter's surname. That's what it is.
Peter Shriver's, man. I've called him Peter Schmeichel. Peter Shithouse. I've called him all sorts of things.
I deserve Shithouse occasionally. There we go.
So, yeah, where are we now? So, your Liverpool days, you know, I think, you know, because this is all linked with Liverpool Football Club. Tell us what you achieved during your Liverpool, your appearances, your goals, your cups, throw it out now and let everyone know, mate, how well you did for us.
Well, you've mentioned names like Souness, Dalglish, Hansen. I had a similar experience to you exactly. And I was sitting at Goodison Park one day, pre-match, and same thought. Exactly as you had. I was nervous about going out to Goodison because they were a good team at the time. I think second best in England at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Peter Reid was in charge and Sharpie was up there. They're just great team, great team. And no love loss. And I was nervous. And then I thought, well, if I was sitting in the Everton dressing room, you know, I thought, well, Souness is next to me. You know, Dalglish is ahead of me, Rushy, Hanson Lawrence at the back. Same as you said, I said, my goodness, why am I nervous? I should be loving this. But I was nervous. And I think if you carry that whole thing with you across the whole spectrum of the 9 years I was there, it just got better. And again,
gives you big belief as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And see, the interesting thing, I'm from the other side of the world and I'm different. You know, I'm different. Everybody knows it. My brain just thinks differently. And I could see the cultural issues. I could see the cliques. I could see the funny side of the funny side. And I you know, sort of a sensitive soul as well. So I saw the hard work in the background and I hated being dropped. So as much, I call it triumph, tragedy, legacy. While I was at Liverpool, I've yet to leave a legacy, but I want to. But the triumph was there, but the tragedy was there for me as well. And getting dropped, mate, that was a tragedy for me because now I wasn't good enough to be in the team. So, you know how I took that? I took that as being, well, I mustn't be good enough to be in the team because if I had taken it any other way, it would have completely eaten me apart. So listen, I did something remarkable halfway through this, as did a mate of yours, Steve McMahon. He's still a mate of yours?
Yeah.
Macca had a transformation as I did. Anyway, long story short, I used to describe myself as the worst player in the world's best team. Thanks for laughing. Because that's the only way I could grapple with the fact that I was the one that kept getting dropped. Years later, I probably know because my face didn't fit and because I, you know, wasn't in the right gang.
It's called realism.
Well, it's other people.
Being hard on yourself.
Yeah, no. But that was how to solve the problem. So I tell you what I did. I thought, okay, Kenny Dalglish, Joe Fagan, Bob Paisley, whoever you are, you know, you're not picking me. So you must be right, like Jack Charlton. So I got a key cut. And I went back to Melwood of an afternoon. So you'd go to training, you'd go back to Anfield, you'd have your dinner. I'd go home, then I'd go back to Melwood. And I'd put my boots on and my kit. And I'd run around Melwood, right? There was concrete slabs, 570 of them. So I'd run around this way, clockwise, 570 kicks with my left foot only and controls. Then I go the other way, 570 the other way, right foot only. Because I was getting back to the Middlesbrough car park conference. Anyway, I got back in the team, started playing really, really well. I really think that I was in a critical part, a little bit like Luis Suarez, right? I could never, ever play like Luis Suarez and have his skill. But when you start biting people because you want the ball so much, yeah. right, then you've got something that nobody else has got.
For that.
Hello, yeah. Hello. Yeah. Well, I had that in me, but I didn't have these teeth like his. Yeah. But what I had was a determination to get that ball off the opposition and give it to someone that could play, yeah. like Kenny, and then run and give him an option going forward. Yeah. So I do still call myself the worst player in the world's best team, right? But I know that my contribution was energy and effort and a good sense of discipline, behavior, and team spirit, because I believe Luis Suarez lifted the team when he was here by 3 or 4%. Mm. But I believe my running around like a headless chicken, which is my nickname, right? But that was from Stan Baldwin, by the way. Stan Baldwin was a very good mate of mine. He still calls me headless to this day, by the way. A dear, lovely friend of mine, Stan. But I'll put myself down when need be.
Yeah.
But then you actually got to say, hey, the SGG, if it wasn't for the SGG, the Mafia in Southport wouldn't have got the victories that they got, right?
But you pick up from that when you put a shift in, and we could say players now and players in that. And you know when people put a shift in, like Crookie put a shift in, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
And you had to, we had to defend from the front.
Yeah.
But that spreads in the team.
Yes, it does.
It spreads into the team. I was lucky enough playing some great, great teams along the way. But then you've got to set the example from the front and chase the goalie down, chase him.
They get cues from the rest of us.
We went through with the medals you won, the cups you won. Yeah. You've been brilliant for Liverpool, Craig. Absolutely. And you still indeed massively in this city, in this club, pal.
Thank you.
And the good thing is, the difference between you and Luis Suarez is you had a taste for beans on toast as opposed to human flesh. So that might have been the difference there. Yeah, I think the last thing that we have to mention, because it would be stupid of us not to mention, because probably the thing you're almost most famous for now, which is crazy for a man who's won 5 leagues and a European Cup for Liverpool, but it's the Predator. You know, you've had a number of inventions that have followed, but that's the one I think that's followed you round the most over the years as well. Yeah. There was a documentary made. Yeah. You got some of the best players on the planet to kick a ball in these boots. Mm. Is that the thing that you find that people want to talk to you about almost as much as you're playing time?
The young kid, it's interesting. You say, somebody says, great John's 5 league champs. His kids go, whatever. Liverpool, whatever. You know, and they say, he invented the Predator. What? The Predator? How do you invent that? It's interesting because we were just at the launch of the 30-year anniversary of the Predator. It's on Apple TV, apparently. And Zidane is talking about it like it was his best friend and it made him as good as he is. Beckham, same thing. Stevie Gerrard's in the documentary.
Mm.
And it tells my story about the interest. What the story doesn't tell you is about the Middlesbrough car park. Because that whole philosophy, what part of foot on what part of ball to what effect, that's why the Predator was made. And that's why I did it with such knowledge and conviction and confidence, because I knew it worked. I knew it worked because I'd spent hours, what part of foot, what part of ball, and why does it end up where? So when Zizou and others are talking about why it was special to them, it's because leather just didn't deliver those properties.
Yeah.
Mm.
You see, so I moved, when I moved away from Germany, I moved to Ireland. A couple of reasons, one being tax.
You like the Guinness?
I love the Guinness. Mm. Mate, I love the Guinness. But you were being taxed here at 80%, Margaret Thatcher at the time. Long story short,
sorry, she's
the Irish.
She's dead.
So here's the plan. So I moved to Ireland because my income was derived from royalties from the Predator. So I paid 0% tax if I lived in Ireland. So that's why I brought the family. I lived in Ireland. Anyway, and it was a wonderful time.
Yeah,
I know your Irish connection. Great place. Yeah, it was beautiful. So When I then moved in, there was a big story in The Guardian about me, and I'm going to give you the Barbie stopper, which sort of brings this whole podcast into a relevant sort of sentence, because I know you said I have to hurry up with the stories because we're late.
I never said
anyway, that. Yes, you did. Anyway, I'll tell you what it is. So the guy sat me down in one of the pubs in Ireland, gave me a pint of Guinness, said, right, the big question. Everybody wants to know how an ex-soccer player, a Liverpool player, won all these medals, becomes an inventor. And I said, well, that's your big mistake. I said, I was an inventor that became a soccer player. And that's why the Predator was then invented on the back of the Middlesbrough car park, because all I wanted to do was be a footballer like the other kids. And I didn't have that skill, but I wanted it and I figured out how to get it. Yeah. So that's my story.
On behalf of everybody who's watching and the lads here, but from 15 years of age in that car park and being technically homeless, at least for a short space of time, to end up, it's mind-blowing. Like, that journey is mind-blowing. So there was definitely something here and something here that got you through that. Fair play.
It's still there. Still
there. I know.
A lot of people don't know this piece. A lot of people don't know this.
In hindsight, we can laugh about it and you can say what you just said. But when you were at 15 years on that car park in Middlesbrough, you didn't think of a Predator. Now it all makes sense. Yeah, but what a journey.
Well, all I thought of you.
He got predated by the Predators. Anyway, that's another story.
That's the Germans for you. That's why I live in Liverpool.
The other thing people don't know, and I was intrigued when I played for Liverpool about this. Do you know when you go to hotels and you used to be able to get away, open the fridge door and have a bevy or whatever and get away with it? And then all of a sudden these clips come on the top of them and then the sensors. He done that.
Yep.
Right or wrong?
Yeah, the butler.
The butler. That was Craig's idea.
Yeah, so inventors can bring great things and great evils into this world at the same time.
Well, no, all you have to do is stop stealing from minibars. hello. You scouser.
We do scouser.
Great.
Yeah, brilliant.
Wow.
Right, mate. Wow. We're going to finish off because I know you're nervous. It's been brilliant. Actually, brilliant.
No peeking now on
we do
all those notes.
We actually do. Do you know, we talk about European Cups before and the fact that how much we loved seeing Liverpool.
Yeah.
There's six questions for you. Uh-huh. And it's because we won fucking six. No, like Pep Guardiola was going like that. Well, we won six European Cups when they only won one, and the others have won two or three. But we won six. Anyway, so six questions on and I'm gonna let Peter do this for you.
Gosh.
And who's
the pressure?
Lucas. Is Lucas winning? Lucas Labour got... Alan Kennedy done well.
Yeah, Alan Kennedy did remarkably well, considering...
Just so you know, I'm really bad at football quizzes, so...
Yeah, well, it's about you, though. Let's see. We'll find out. So
I've got one for you, very quickly. Name me two Aussies that scored in the FA Cup final. Two Aussies that have scored in an FA Cup final.
Leon Osman?
Yeah.
Me, yes, I'm one.
Leon Osman?
No.
Hold on a minute. Tim Cahill, no, he didn't do it. No.
Viduka?
No. I'll tell you, you never get
Tony
it.
Tony the Tiger?
No. Me and Ozzy Ardiles. Oh. Yeah, carry on, ask your question.
That's a good one for other people to have.
Only one other, that's a very similar, let's see if you know this. Only one other Craig has played for Liverpool. Can you name him?
That's easy, mate.
I know.
Someone such as a genius like you, that's a piece of piss.
Who's a young lad?
Well, not that young.
Well, he's got quite a senior job in a national team now.
Yeah.
He's a national team coach now.
Yeah.
I'm not telling you which one. Yeah, it's a Craig, yeah.
His first name's Craig.
Is that a no?
Huh?
Is that a you don't know?
No, I don't know.
Craig Bellamy.
Oh,
he's God. Welsh.
Okay. Sorry.
No problem.
That's okay. I got it now.
Yeah.
You first came up against the Reds when visiting Anfield with Middlesbrough in December 79. The game ended 4-0 victory for LFC. Which former Liverpool player lined up alongside you with Middlesbrough that day?
Souness.
Oh!
No.
I mean, I guess that is
That's an oversight if he did.
That's an, that, 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 that's
because
they
got David Hodgson here.
But we got David Hodgson here. Yeah. Okay, we give you, let's see where we are at the end.
Yeah, no, give them, no, that's fair.
That's the point. Yeah. Which two players also made their LFC debuts at, in the same game as you when LFC were beaten 1-0 away to Wolves in 81?
Yeah.
Good question. I told you I'm no good at sports quizzes. I don't know. When you say it, I'll go, yeah, of course, but I don't know. See, my brain doesn't work that way.
One of them is someone you like very much, who we spoke about at length earlier.
And the other we played at Wolves, made our debut on the same day.
Yeah, they made the debut the same day as you.
It's got a very Australian name.
Bruce?
Yes.
Good hint. Yeah. I was going to say Sheila.
And a second one.
Skip me the most kangaroo.
Okay. It's half a point. It's half a point for Chris. Half a point. Question number four.
Hang on then.
You do the one. A defender.
Not Stephen.
Ex-pundit.
Ex-what?
Pundit. He's been doing a lot of TV work here in the UK.
Fucking hell, okay. How many more fucking clues do you want?
Oh, Gary Ablett? No?
No.
Oh,
Mark Lawrenson.
All right. listen, what you...
I've got the predator.
No, it's okay, no problem.
Yeah, well, I have.
Yeah.
I have. As I said, my brain doesn't work like that.
I love it,
and
though.
Those memories is not top
one.
Of mind. Yeah, do it.
I'm not giving you the clue before I ask the question, but I've got a clue. Which player did Liverpool pay a higher transfer fee for? John Aldridge or Craig Johnston?
Again, I was there for both of them. And
you were 50-50 chance.
I know, I was 650, and you'd only mention it if you were higher. So, I'm going to say John Aldridge. Yeah? Hello, see? Logic gets
you. No, but to be fair, I was 750, but you were a few years. Yours is probably more valuable than me because
with inflation, that's probably
a lot. I wouldn't have mentioned it. If he was like 400,000, the question wouldn't be in there. But no, honestly, I told you about quizzes. When I left here, right, at 27, my sister got in a dreadful way. I tried to forget about football because to remember it only sort of brought back, you know, tearful memories. Mm. So that kind of stuff has just passed me by.
You've got no chance on this fucking one, then, by the way.
Go for it.
So you provided Aldo with two assists during at LFC. But did Aldo ever provide you with an assist?
That expensive amount of money, you should have. You know when he headbutted me in Munich once at a beer killer? Remember that? You remember that?
Did he?
It's only head to head.
We had a hitch.
Like he tried to kiss him and it went wrong? Or
competition.
We were stupid and young and dumb and expensive. And we had a headbutting competition in Munich on the beer.
And who won that competition?
I wish social media had been around back then.
It's all those special moves.
The question again, did you ever set up a goal for me?
Yeah. No, the other way. Did you set one up for Aldo?
Did I set one up for you? Yeah.
Sorry, the other way, yeah.
Well, he must have, otherwise you wouldn't have. you know, it's just logic. So the answer is yes.
Good. Fine. Yes. And it was.
So where was it at?
Well, that would have been nice if you had known. But
White Hart Lane, okay.
Do you remember when I got the ball and I knew you and I just flicked it back to you and you come and smashed it?
That's my boy. Sour grapes, gang. Payback time.
Okay, you do know that, Craig. You do know that, mate. Yeah. Last one.
I mean, as long as you beat Steve Nicol, right? You know, in terms of points. I think you need to actually
Nicol came in. You know him. Like, we started on the beer and we had a couple of pints because it was later on. Yeah. He was bollocks.
Was he?
And that's when he left here. And then we went to his office at the Bernstein.
What a good lad, by the way. What a good lad.
Brilliant.
So your final LFC appearance came in 88 FA Cup final when you came on to replace Aldo in the 64th minute.
Against Wimbledon.
Can you name Liverpool's other substitute at Wembley that day?
No. No, you can't, if you think.
Okay. He's also a foreigner. Come on. He's also...
Doesn't sound it though.
No.
When he speaks.
Smith.
No, not his name. His accent.
Is it like yours?
Yes, no, that's more like mine. Right?
Fake German.
Yeah, exactly.
It's more like mine.
So he sounds more like Aldo, but yeah, he's one of the small foreign group you had.
And Moby.
Yeah.
Yes! Saved
well
it.
Done, mate. Well done, mate. So that's a good quality. Four out of six.
Yeah, not bad.
I'll take that. Listen, we're late for my show.
Yeah.
Look, the bouncers are over there. Are you coming? Come on, Aldo.
I can't.
Sound as a pound.
I wish I could. I really wish I could.
All right,
I wish
all right. I'm going to leave. Hurry up.
It's been brilliant. Absolutely brilliant, mate. Really mean. I'll see you at the game tomorrow, yeah?
Yes.
Craig, great to have you on.
Yeah, thank and Paul, great to have you, man.
Thank you so much.
You've done it.
Grateful to make my debut. You
very, very well indeed, Paul. Yeah,
JP will return for anyone who did enjoy it. Yeah,
might be sad. So, yeah, that's the end of the show. Brilliant. I've enjoyed every minute. It's a little bit like science class sometimes, but Craig's top man. So, thank you for listening on behalf of Hotel Anfield, Peter, Paul, Craig, and myself. See you next time.
See you soon.